Ed Harris has been acting in films, television, and on stage for 30 years, earning a reputation for thorough preparation and intense performances. He earned Oscar nominations for his roles in Apollo 13, The Truman Show, The Hours, and Pollock, which he also directed. His other films include A Beautiful Mind, The Right Stuff, and HBO's Empire Falls. Next month, Harris stars at New York's Public Theater in Rex, a play written and directed by Neil LaBute. Harris has played a number of real historical figures, astronaut John Glenn, artist Jackson Pollock, and Watergate figure Howard Hunt. Now in his new film, Harris plays the composer Ludwig von Beethoven in a film directed by Agnieszka Holland called Copying Beethoven. It's the fictional story of a young woman who lands a job copying musical scores for Beethoven near the end of his life. Beethoven is at first reluctant to have the help of a young woman, especially as he prepares his Ninth Symphony. In this scene, Harris, as Beethoven, is in a tavern talking with his friend, the tavern owner. He's wondering if he should send the woman away or see her as a sign from God.
This new symphony, it's my farewell.
You're not that sick.
No. My farewell to music, as I've always known it, as I've always written it.
You've been talking about that for years, Louis.
I'm starting a new chapter in my life. New forms, a new language. And now this woman is sent to me. At this very moment. What if she was sent by him?
Women are usually sent by the other one.
No, suppose it's a sign.
A sign for what, Louis?
That it's time.
A time for what?
A time for me to join with him.
Well, if it's true, and she was sent by him, and she's waiting in your apartment, you shouldn't be sitting here drinking, should you?
To prepare for the role, Harris spent months taking piano and violin lessons. I asked him if the lessons were for the moments when he plays those instruments on screen, or to inform his performance in some other way.
Well, kind of both. I mean, I knew I would have to play a little bit on screen, but also just, I mean, I grew up, I played, you know, piano 2 years in second and third grade or something, and then I played the baritone horn, which is kind of a cross between a tuba and a French horn, through high school. So, I mean, I knew music, could read music, but my life is not really centered around music, and so it was to play the piano, but it was also to just infuse my life with music and to be thinking about it all the time and to practice every day and to know that this was where this man lived. You know, he was constantly with music, constantly in his head, constantly composing. And, you know, so it just helped kind of fill me up.
And what about his personality, his physical mannerisms? I mean, how did you get to that? Was that based on contemporary descriptions or biographies?
Well, the film really covers the last couple of years of his life, kind of condenses. Mm-hmm. It begins when he's in the middle of finishing the Ninth Symphony, and goes to his death. And, you know, there's some wonderful drawings of him on the street, friends that, you know, drew pictures of him at the time. And he was quite an eccentric guy, particularly at this time in his life. And there's descriptions of him walking through the street and people kind of, you know, getting out of his way and dogs barking at him, because he was a bit of an odd fellow. And he would walk slightly bent forward with his hands clasped behind his back and kind of always be hearing something in his head, always hearing some music in his head. So that kind of posture helped a little bit.
One of the most memorable scenes in this film is the one where you, as Beethoven, are conducting an orchestra, debuting the Ninth Symphony. And, of course, this is not one that we can really give the audience your performance on radio, because you have no lines. It's all visual. But let's just give the audience just a sense of the power of some of this music. This is a magnificent scene in which you're debuting the Ninth Symphony as Beethoven. Talk a little bit about the challenge of recording this. You've got a full orchestra, a full chorus.
We had a full orchestra. We were working down in a little town called Kecskemét, which is south of Budapest, and we shot this in Hungary. And it was a local orchestra and choir. They had to bring in some outside musicians to fill in the orchestra because there were no women in the orchestras at that time. And we shot it in maybe 3.5 days. We used a recording, a high-tink recording, from the Decca record collection that had access to. It was the best recording in Jeskefelt that represented this piece of music. So that music would always be piped in very loud, you know, loudly enough so that the orchestra that was actually playing could hear it and play along with it, because otherwise it would have been hell to mix if we were recording live with the orchestra. So I'm conducting them, and they are playing live. And we just, we worked our butts off for, you know, long 3 days. It's about a 12-minute segment. It has some pieces from the first, second, and fourth movement of the Ninth Symphony. And, boy, I tell you, it was thrilling. I mean, especially when they would cut the actual recording and I would keep conducting the orchestra, and then the choir would come in and we'd finish up the final movement, and then everybody would just go, yeah! You know, it was really just thrilling. I'd worked really hard on it. It's a difficult piece of music. I mean, there are some portions of that, of the symphony, where it's a thing that conductors study for years, you know.
You know, this film calls to mind Pollock, at which you directed and co-produced, about the famous painter Jackson Pollock. What so fascinated you about Pollock?
I think initially it was the obstacles, the personal obstacles that he had to overcome to achieve what he did. His kind of demons, the tormented kind of life that he had, his problems with alcohol, his kind of antisocial behavior. I mean, I just, there was parts of that that I identified with, not so much in the present day, but I recall when I first began acting, it was such a private thing for me. I felt very uncomfortable in the presence of other people, and I was not much of a social animal, and I just really had a lot of empathy for this guy as a man, you know. And then when I began to look at his art and try to appreciate what he'd done, the more time I spent with it, deeper and deeper I got involved, and I became obsessed with the guy. You know, I had to do this.
Well, and as you mentioned, you began painting, and I think the scenes in the film Pollock, at which you are Pollock painting, are pretty compelling, and I was wondering there, when you're doing those things, are you thinking about the work of art you're creating, or are you thinking of, yeah.
No, yeah. I was really just trying to paint something that had merit. You know, unfortunately, you know, I would actually be creating something that I felt was working when the camera was on the canvas, you know, most of the time. A couple things in there that I thought were trash, but when the camera was, but then the camera would turn around on me, and to save canvas, to save time, etc., I would keep working on the same piece. And so I would kind of like screw them up, you know, a bit. So I didn't really accomplish anything that I was too proud of, but there were moments along the way where I felt really good about what I was doing. But yeah, it was always just focusing on the work. It was, I had really studied the way he painted, you know, with the Namath film and all that. Had built a little studio for myself so I could work on the floor on a larger space. And so in the film, really the filming those painting scenes were probably the easiest part of the movie for me, because it was the most freeing, you know.
Well, you know, the other thing about this film, of course, is that you didn't just act in it. You were its director, which is, of course, a whole nother workload when you're making a film. There is a story, and sometimes these get exaggerated in the telling, but I read that there was one moment where I think to get your co-star, Marcia Gay Harden's attention, you threw a chair. Did this really happen? Do you recall this episode?
I probably did. It's that scene where she comes out of the bath and talk about having children, and I just knew that there was a deeper place that she could get with it, and I just tried to shake her up a little bit, you know, which she didn't mind.
Yeah, well, she said that you really helped her get to a place she would never have otherwise gotten.
Yeah. I mean, working with Marcia Gay was great, and it's kind of the way Agnieszka works with me. I mean, you can pretty much say anything, do anything with someone that you're that feels that comfortable with you, and vice versa. You know, they know you're not trying to manipulate them. They know that you're just trying to get them to deal with something that maybe they're not getting down to, you know.
Well, I think we ought to listen to that clip then. This is from the film Pollock. My guest Ed Harris and his co-star Marcia Gay Harden.
Let's make a baby.
No.
No. Am I missing something here? Are you missing something?
We can't.
We can't?
My life is full enough with you, Jackson.
Wait a minute. Where are you going? Don't walk away from me. We're husband and wife. I want to have a baby, our baby. That's what the progression of things is about. That's what the union is about.
That's not what the union is about.
Well, what else is there?
That's not what it's about, Jackson.
For me?
The vows don't stipulate baby. I am not going to bring another life into that.
And that was my guest Ed Harris and his co-star Marcia Gay Harden in the film Pollock. We're speaking with Ed Harris. His new film is copying Beethoven. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is actor Ed Harris. He's debuting in New York, a new play by Neil LaBute called Rex. He's also appearing in the new film copying Beethoven. You have another memorable role in A History of Violence, and I thought we would listen to a piece of you speaking with Maria Bello. This is the scene where you're playing Carl Fogarty, who is a Philadelphia thug who has come into town seeking revenge on a gangster who had disappeared and who it now turns out appears to be working in this town. And Maria Bello is his wife and doesn't believe her husband has anything to do with you and your fellow gangsters. In this scene, she has lost track of her daughter shopping for shoes in a mall, and she discovers that the daughter is near you as Carl Fogarty. Let's listen.
Nothing to worry about, Mrs. Stahl. I've been watching over her.
You stay away from my family, you son of a...
There's no need for that kind of language, Mrs. Stahl.
Listen to me. I don't know what you want, and I don't really care.
You should care about what I want, Mrs. Stahl, because I want something from your husband that might affect you. Might change your life.
My husband does not know you. He wouldn't know you, somebody like you.
Oh, he knows Carl Fogarty, all right. He knows me intimately. See, this isn't a completely dead eye. It still works a bit. Problem is, the only thing I can see with it is Joey Cusack. And it can see right through him. Right through your husband, Edie. See what's inside him, what makes him tick. He's still the same guy. He's still crazy Joey. And you know it, don't you?
I know that my husband is Tom Stahl. That's what I know.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, why don't you ask Tom about his older brother, Richie?
He does.
Ask Tom about how he tried to rip my eye out with barbed wire. And ask him, Edie, how come he's so good at killing people?
That's my guest, Ed Harris, from the film A History of Violence. Boy, you're a scary guy there, you know? you know, one of the things about the character there, I mean, your character, Carl Fogarty, is disfigured. He has an eye damage from a previous encounter with this guy he has been stalking. In the Beethoven film, you're wearing all this period stuff that really transforms you physically. And I'm wondering, do those physical trappings help you kind of internalize the character in any way? I mean, because you don't have them when you're rehearsing, when you're thinking about the part.
Right. No, very much so, particularly in the Beethoven thing. I mean, you know, I don't have much hair at all, so to have a big full head of hair, and we did some little bit of alteration facially, and, it helped a great deal because, and in the period costumes, I mean, it gives you a certain, much different feeling on your body. I'd also put on some weight for this role because Beethoven was a rather stocky fellow, and so all of that helps not just visibly when you check yourself out in the mirror, but it also definitely helps internalize and feel comfortable in your skin and know that you are, you know, give you the freedom to feel and imagine yourself as this other person.
When you're getting a role together, when you're before you're shooting and you're imagining how you're going to animate this character, do you ever put on stuff or try to do things to sort of put yourself in the period?
Well, you know, there's a lot of little things you do in the privacy of your own home or studio, wherever you happen to be, that are probably different for every actor, and they kind of going to remain private. You know, it's a lot easier to do that sometimes on your own than it is in a rehearsal with even other actors, you know. I mean, it's different in theater because you're rehearsing a play and you have weeks to work physically, internally, with the script, with the beats of the drama or whatever it might be, with the fellow actors, and find out where you're going to go. And if you work on something physically, privately, you bring it in, you're working on it in rehearsal. But on film, you really don't have that much rehearsal time. You show up, the cameras are rolling, you got to be ready to go, man. So, you know, there's a lot, it's a little bit of a different kind of work that way, filmically.
Do you prefer one or the other? I mean, I know you're doing a play now.
No, I enjoy both. I mean, I hadn't done a play in 10 years prior to doing this Neil LaBute play in Ireland last fall, and I just had a great time, and I'm really looking forward to doing it at the Public here pretty soon. So,
right, that's debuting in New York in October, right?
Yeah.
Maybe you should just say a little bit about that. You did it in Europe at Cork, Ireland. This is a play at which you're sort of narrating a kind of a mourning process, is that right, for someone who's died?
Well, no, it's really kind of a love story. I mean, it's a one-character play about a man whose wife has passed, who happens to be on the stage in the casket. I mean, the casket's closed. And he kind of removes himself from the wake, the group of people that are here to say goodbye to her, and he really addresses the audience and talks to them about their relationship, and it's some of it's pretty funny, some of it's hopefully kind of moving, and has a few LaBute-isms in there, and it's a pretty entertaining evening.
Well, Ed Harris, it's been a lot of fun. Thanks for speaking with us.
Thank you, Dave. It's been great to be on the show. Appreciate it.
Actor Ed Harris. He stars in the new film Copying Beethoven, and next month he'll be at New York's Public Theater starring in Rex, a play written and directed by Neil LaBute.